In the words of Robert Earl Keane, the road goes on forever and the party never ends. We're back for the Parachute of the Patriots for the 251st time. I'm glad you could join us. Looking forward to today's show right off the bat. If you're looking for a Christmas show, I did that yesterday on the Daily Nationalist. Yes, it was very Christmassy, very preachy. Really not the correct format for the Daily Nationalist, but I wanted to do a Christmas show. And so, you know, if it's a Christmas show, I'm going to be preachy. So if you're looking for a Christmas message, that was yes, you got to check that out. Hopefully you got something out of it. Today's not the Christmas show. This is the day after Christmas. We rock. We are rocking. We are rocking on. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Do pass the plate around. It's easy to do. If you look on the description page here for the Parish of the Patriots, I got snail mail, got Bitcoin, Monero, email address. Drop your notes there if you got a different kind of cryptocurrency. Let me know. I will get you an address for that. Let's just get right into. Let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. Merry Christmas, Dan. I'm getting y'all's Christmas cards. Very lovely cards, by the way. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do my Elvis voice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas, Dan, to you and your loved ones. All the best for 24, mate. And a big thank you for all of your extra efforts this year. Warm regards. And that's from Red Pilled in Vienna. I do appreciate it. And then that reminds me, talking about extra effort, the plan is, let's see, today is Tuesday. So the plan is Thursday, Dr. Johnson and I are going to try to sit down and have a year end wrap up show. We haven't done a round table in a minute. So look forward to that. It's going to be a lot. I'm looking forward to it. I hope everything pans out. And you know, if it does, that's what we plan to do. So y'all be sure and check it out. It's always fun to sit down with Matt and have a discussion. It gets old just talking with just me. I know you get tired of it, tired of it too, but look forward to it. It's always a great discussion when we get a chance to sit down. I miss the times when we all three got to sit down. It was more of a round table then. Let's keep on going here. Dear Grandpa, wishing you and your family a very Merry Christmas season, including some for Savannah, if you'd be so kind. I'm dealing with some health issues of my own and have been remiss in supporting him. But well, thanks for all you do, and may God bless you, sir. And that's from Nick. Thank you very much. And of course, I will pass that on. I've got some. I've got some. I'm sitting back. I'm holding back. So when he gets out, I'm going to send to him snail mail style. But most of what I send his way, I send up through the Give Send to Go link. So just to remind y'all, on our Daily Nationalist shows, I've gotten to where I put the Sven support links on the Daily Nationalist show, every Daily Nationalist show. I don't put them on Dr. Johnson's Orthodox National show or My Parish of the Patriots because it gets just too cluttered. You've got all these different things and it gets too cluttered. But we do have various things. And in the Give, Send, Go, if you want to kick money his way, is the easiest way to go. I understand some of y'all don't want to put your name down there, whatever, for whatever reason. I don't mind. I'm not bitching and complaining. I'm just reminding people that we do have those support links for Send. But yes, I will take care of sending your part his way. GPD, my gut feeling tells me something big is coming. I don't know what, but I guess I will know when it gets here. That's from Mr. T. Well, the something big is this empire is in the process of collapsing. You think back to empires that fell apart in years before, and you know, we look back in history and see them coming apart, but the people, in all likelihood, the people that lived there in it at the time, you know, they didn't just recognize, they just thought things were kind of getting weird or whatever. We're in the middle of it. And I see this, it's playing out as most obvious in the foreign policy, areas, it's the most obvious. But this empire is coming apart. That's a good thing. I'm not saying times aren't going to get tough, you know, and when the whole thing, as this whole thing unravels, it is going to get tough. I was talking with somebody recently and they said, you know, man, what do you do to fix it? I said, well, you can't fix it. You know, it's just going to come apart. There's no turning around. We're too far down the road. This thing's just going to come apart. And, you know, you look around and I've said this for a while and I always have to be careful how I word it so people understand what I'm saying here. But I believe as this system, as this corrupt system does unwind and implode on itself, however long that takes, you know, we're going to see basically a massive culling. There's going to be a lot of people culled out of society. And I always want to be clear what I mean by that is there's going to be people that just aren't going to be able to handle it. they're literally going to, what I'm saying, to put it very directly so it can't be misinterpreted, these people, there's a lot of people that are just going to go out and kill themselves because they're just not going to be able to deal with it. To put this in context, when you have people that have literal psychological breakdowns over what sort of pronouns you use, look, when the system that allows for that just completely comes apart, they're going to be able to handle that. They're just going to go hang themselves in the closet. People like you and I, we're going to get up the next day and go, man, times are tough, but you're still going to get up the next day and try to figure out some sort of way to put food on the table, some sort of way to make it through another day. That's the way we're going to live. That's the way we live. That's what life is. But you look at these soy boy type people and these ridiculous people that just live off of, they're sustained by the corrupt system. You know, they're just going to look at when it all comes apart, they're not going to be able to handle it. It's going to be, they're just going to call themselves out of the population because they're just not going to be able, you know, not going to be able to handle that. And again, the rest of us here, you know, it's going to be our job. Just get up every day, try to do something to make life better. You know, and that's how you start building things back. I believe, I've said this before, I believe the U.S. as an entity is over. You know, I do believe you're going to wind up with a breaking apart into smaller countries, which is always going to be better than this. But, you know, that's the something big. You know, I think that's what you're feeling, I guess, to answer what I was trying to get to. You know, that is what you're looking at. That is the feeling you get because you're seeing it all. It's all coming apart in real time. If there's one word I could use to describe this system, you know, that we live under, it would be, I was thinking of different things you could describe. And everything, because it's a corrupt and ultimately satanic system, it's disingenuous. You know, they put things, everything in this that's put forth by this society, it's all disingenuous. They dress things up. And of course, I always tend to come at things from a U.S. standpoint, from an American standpoint, but this applies to the Western, quote unquote, you know, allies. They're just puppet states as well. For instance, they dress these things up because they don't want to tell you. They don't want to tell you, you know, directly what they're up to, obviously, because you wouldn't go along with it. So they dress these things up. One of a prime example of this disingenuousness, you know, are these hate crime laws. You know, they pass these hate crime laws, and we have them here in the U.S. Now, we don't have the hate speech laws like, for instance, they have in the U.K. We don't have those yet, but we do have hate crime laws here. And then people hear that and they say, well, yeah, we're against people hating. You know, people shouldn't be hated on and have crimes committed against them just because of their race or their sexuality or whatever the case may be. And it sounds good, but it's disingenuous. The reality is, if they were being honest, if they weren't being disingenuous, what they would tell you is, we're going to pass laws to where the laws and the punishments are not meted out equally for the same crime. White people will be punished harshly. They will be punished more harshly than people who are not. They're not going to tell you that, of course, but that is what they actually mean. Aside from a few outliers, and the outliers actually prove the point, hate crime laws are almost unilaterally applied only to white people. Again, they're not going to tell you that. They're going to say, well, we're doing away with equality under the law. If somebody comes up and assaults somebody, or somebody comes up and robs somebody, or somebody comes up and murders somebody, now a just person, a normal person says that person should be punished for that crime, regardless of their motivations. You know, I mean, who, you know, outside of, well, you killed somebody in self-defense, that's not actually murder. We're talking just murder. You know, regardless of if they committed the murder because, you know, they had a personal grudge against that person, or they committed the murder because they just got off on the idea of killing somebody. So regardless, they should be punished across the board for that same thing. But hate crime laws mean that they're going to establish a harsher penalty on you overall because you're white. Because again, this is where we all know where these laws are applied. These laws, of course, work hand in hand with the media, which once again highlights the idea that we have a quote unquote free press, like an independent press in this country, an independent media in this country. It's just ridiculous. The media works hand in hand with this. If you look at two examples, you have, for instance, you have these examples that were going around for a while, and you have these instances where like a black person will initiate a confrontation with a white person. It seemed to be predominantly among women. This was kind of more of a thing back last summer, perhaps a year before. And then, of course, once the confrontations ensued, the black person would start filming and go, oh my gosh, this hysterical white person is just attacking me for being black. They didn't show the part leading up to that. But the media goes hand in hand, amplifies this disturbing video circulating of this lunatic white person. I was thinking of, you know, you have instances where some old white man or some old Asian man's walking down the street and a young black man runs up and punches him in the side of the head and knocks him out. We saw many videos of that and the way the media treated that. It was just basically ignored. No talk of hate crimes being applied. They were teens, you know, up to hijinks and up to just crazy hijinks and these crazy kids these days. And you compare that to the way the story you remember from some time back of the white woman, I think it was in Central Park, being hysterical because this black guy she didn't know walked up to her and started talking to her. And there was this hysteria and the way the media, you know, Central Park Karen or whatever, and she lost her job and had her life destroyed because she was uncomfortable because some black guy she didn't know came up to her in the park. The inequality under the law is propped up, in other words, with the media. And of course, the media is propped up with censorship. So they present a narrative. They present this narrative. If they just came at you and said, well, hate crime laws mean that we're going to punish white people in a more harsh manner for the same crimes that other people are committing. Again, nobody would want to buy into that. So they dress it up and they call it hate crime laws. Talking about this disingenuousness. Oh, this is disingenuous. I was thinking the other day, I saw another story to where the White House was talking about how concerned they are that Israel is slaughtering Palestinian civilians by the tens of thousands. And one of the things they said here a while back, I don't remember which one of these shills it was. They said, nobody is more concerned. Nobody is doing more to protect the civilians of Gaza than the U.S., which, of course, is a lie. They're giving the bombs to kill those people. You know, their support is they come out and make a press conference and say, we're really, really, really wringing our hands about this. We're really concerned. But I saw another report the other day, and they were talking about how concerned they are. And they're very concerned, very, very concerned. And they really want Israel to stop slaughtering these people. The U.S. is very concerned. And it's disingenuous. The nation that dropped two atomic bombs on an already defeated Japan on civilian population centers is worried about civilian casualties. Let's talk about this. Let's get real about this for a minute. The same country that dropped, the only country that has ever nuked anybody is the U.S. And they nuked an already defeated Japan. They nuked two population centers because they wanted to see how those things worked, how well they worked. Generals at the time, I think it was MacArthur and Eisenhower, both were highly opposed to dropping those bombs on them, but they did it anyway because they put all this money in it. We got to show the Soviets what we got. The same country that was a part of firebombing Dresden, which had no military objective whatsoever, incinerating the citizens, the civilian population of Dresden, they're very concerned. They're very concerned about the civilians in Gaza. Really? I mean, we're really supposed to believe that. And people get all upset and they say, well, they're not concerned about that. They're sending the bombs. And that's true. But if you look at it in a historical context, this is the way this government has functioned for a long, long time. A nation that's part of firebombing civilian-filled cities with no military objective, I don't think they're very concerned about the civilians in Gaza. Of course, American politics is the height of disingenuousness. It amazes me to watch people still buying into the voting thing. They think the democracy has something to do with voting and they go and vote. I always get a little bit, I don't know, you know, I get a little put out when I see somebody write an article, read some article, because I read lots of different stuff. So I wind up reading a lot of normie tier stuff. And I'll see some normie tier conservative type article, you know, bemoaning the fact that why do the people keep voting? Why do they not vote these people out? We gotta vote these bums out. And it's disingenuous because I've been around a while, and over my lifetime, the people have voted these bums out. Back before elections were 100% pretty much just rigged, people did vote the bums out, and they had this guy that they thought they were voting for. I mean, look at Ted Cruz, for instance. I'm going to pick on Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, many of you may not be old enough to know, he was voted in as an outsider. He was like the Trump of his day. He was one of those candidates. He was a Tea Party candidate. That was one of the things back then, the Tea Party. It was like a modern day cringe version of like the modern day version of the Boston Tea Party. I remember seeing these old people standing around with their three pointed hats on with tea bags hanging off of it and stuff. And it was kind of silly. But Ted Cruz was voted in as a Tea Party darling, a Tea Party. He was supposed to be an outsider candidate. What the hell has Ted Cruz ever changed? You know, what has Ted Cruz done for the people? Nothing. And I read these articles and somebody said, why do the people keep, how come the people have failed to vote these bums out and vote better people in there? And that's just disingenuous or stupid. It's one of the two, because I've been around long enough and the people have done that multiple times in my life. And it didn't make a difference. You know, the people that they put up there and they thought they were voting for, because this guy's a real outsider and he's going to change things. He's going to change things. And as soon as he gets there, he does the same exact stuff that the guys you voted out for. And everybody's scratching their head going, they just don't understand. We need to vote harder next time. They don't understand that the people you're allowed to vote on are handpicked. They'll run them as an outsider, but they're handpicked. It's all about the primaries. Now we have this just in-your-face voter fraud. I mean, we do. They're basically criminalizing pointing that out. But that's the truth. You know, the media is working. I was talking about like the hate crime thing. They've lumped in misinformation there too. They talk about, you know, you're not supposed to point it out, and the fact that they're so defensive about it tells you a lot, doesn't it? We have out and out voter fraud there. But the way it worked beforehand, leading up to that, is all of that was done. See, that's not a new thing. What's new is it's being done in the general elections now, and mostly as a reaction to Donald Trump, which was kind of an anomaly, I think. This out-and-out, in-your-face general election voter fraud thing, this is a fairly new thing. The way the system worked up until this point is through the primaries. They would cull through before you even knew who any of the candidates were going to be. This is done, you have to understand, this is done, I'm not saying during the primary election. The rigging was done back before anybody even announced who was going to be who. These parties sit down and they hand pick which candidates are going to be on the ballot and who's going to win. This is all worked out ahead of time. So when Team R brings their candidate who stands up there and says, I'm going to return the government to the people, and he's running against the Team D candidate who says, I'm going to strengthen the labor unions and make sure that everybody who's working for a living can earn an honest living and support their families. Those two candidates are handpicked and you voting. And when they get in there, they're still doing everything for the big corporations, the big banks, military industrial complex, and all the rest of them. That the last guys, it doesn't matter. That's where the fix was in. Look, I'm telling you, I've seen this my whole life. They have voted. The people have voted those bums out multiple times. And you know what they always wound up with in their place? New bums. Why don't the people vote these bums out of here? Why do we keep? Because they have. And the people that replaced them were just different bums that promoted the exact same thing. I cannot tell you. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this. You know, some guy runs on a platform. We're going to stop whatever. And as soon as he gets in there, he's doing the exact same thing the guy you voted out did. And it's just like without even blinking an eye. And then some guy comes along and writes a big article just bemoaning the fact that the people are so stupid. They keep voting. They keep vote. They won't vote these bums out. No, they have. They voted that bum in because he was running as not a bum. They're all bums. Every last damn one of them, they're bums. And their job is to take the heat. The government is not run by the politicians. Don't you understand that? Their job, they get paid. Not the little measly salary that they get paid on the books. They get paid to take the heat. They get paid to be blamed. That's their job. When people get mad and yell and point and scream and talk about these lousy politicians, that's what they get paid to do. They sit there, it runs off of them like water off a duck's back. When you sit up there, you see two politicians going at it, you know, at a debate, and they're calling each other everything but a white man. When it's all over, they go play golf together and have drinks. They understand this is just a show. This is just part of the deal, you know? This is no different than when two actors are filming a movie together and they're in a huge fist fight and throwing each other through windows. Well, when they're done, they're not sitting there cussing each other out. They sit there and go back on the set and have a drink together and, I don't know, smoke a cigar or something and talk about, yeah, that this film's going to be good. We're going to make some money off of it. That's how politics works in this country. It's all disingenuous. They know. Their role is to be cussed at. Their role is for the people to look at and vent and point because they want the people looking at who's really running things. I don't know how many times in my lifetime, I literally cannot tell you how many times I've heard some Team D politician stand up there on the campaign trail and tell the morons that are going to vote for them that they're going to quote unquote make the rich pay their fair share. The next time, because we got election season, we're rolling into election season. When these Team D candidates stand up there and inevitably talk about pound the podium and tell the voters that they're going to make the rich pay their fair share. I wish the voters had a way of feeding back and asking them, okay, well, the same people from your party, previous politicians from your party, for decades now, have made this same promise. How come the rich are not paying their fair share now? Well, how come every candidate that came before you, who a lot of them are still serving in Congress, they're your senpai now, they're your senior now, how come they still aren't paying their fair share? I heard this 30 years ago. Well, what's the holdup? Of course, again, this is disingenuous as well, because the implication is you're going to have more money. You, as a working class person, is going to have more money if somehow the rich were to pay more taxes. Of course, they're not. The government's not going to take the money from them and hand it to you. That's just silly. Of course, they use this for cover to come down on the rest of us. You remember Nancy Pelosi and the whole thing about she wants to know if you got $600 in your bank account. And she's justifying that is this is how we're going to crack down on billionaires hiding money offshore by knowing if you got $600 in your in-country local bank account. They justify this and only morons keep falling for it. They do. They keep falling for it over and over again. We got to make the rich pay their fair share. We're going to get back to the founding fathers and the Constitution. We're going to follow the Constitution. If I'm elected, I'm going to appoint judges that follow the Constitution. If I get elected, we're going to take the money from the rich and all the poor people and the working people are going to get their fair share and everybody's going to live kumbaya and be happy. It's all a lie. It's all disingenuous. And they know it. That's their job. There's a reason that you're allowed to make fun of politicians to a certain extent, you know, and because that's what they get paid for. That's why they get all that money to take all that heat. They're not accountable to the voters. Look, you think about yourself. Think about yourself and your job. Who are you accountable for? You're accountable for your boss or your boss's boss. Ultimately, you're accountable. Listen to me now. At your job, you personally, this is a good way to understand. This just popped in my head, and I'm just one of those moments. I'm like, this is what makes me me. You humble to the end. At your job, you're accountable to your boss or your boss's boss. Ultimately, you are accountable to whoever it is that signs your damn paycheck. Like, if you got two, like your boss tells you to do this, but another boss tells you to do something different, the boss that signs your check, that's the one you're going to do. If they're two conflicting things, whoever writes your check, that's who you're going to do it for, because he's the one who writes your check. And if you tell him, you say, well, this other boss told me not to, he's going to look at you and he's going to say, who signs your damn paycheck? Then you're going to be like, yes, sir, I'm going to get after it. Why do you think politicians operate any different? Their boss is whoever signs their check. And guess what? It ain't you.
Well, they're paid by the taxpayer.
No, they're not. They paid crumbs. Look, that hundred and something thousand dollars a year they make, that $100,000, their congressional salary, that's a joke. They don't even care about that. Nancy Pelosi didn't wind up being worth millions and millions of dollars because she saved diligently that hundred and something thousand she made in the Congress. Come on now, y'all. I know y'all get it. I say y'all in this context. I'm just talking about the people in general. I know I'm not talking about y'all. I know y'all ain't stupid. But come on, how do people be that stupid? She can get all that money. She can get all that money off of that $100,000. You ain't getting, they're not paid by the taxpayers. They won't give a crap about that. You can do, look, let me put it another way. If you passed a law and said members of Congress don't get paid anything, they should just volunteer to serve their country. And you know what? These people would still pay, they would still pay millions and millions of dollars to get elected. It wouldn't change a damn thing. Why? Because you're not the one paying them. And ultimately, just like you at your job, you answer to who it is that signs your paycheck. And it damn sure ain't me. It damn sure ain't you. The politicians don't care. You're the customer. You're the politician is the wagee working at the counter at the store. Their job is to listen to customer complaints and sit there and nod and say, oh, yeah, I'll be sure and pass that up and we'll see about that. Yeah, oh, okay. That's your job. They're no different than if you call up and complain to a company on the phone about their customers. They're the customer service line, but you ain't writing their paycheck. They don't care. Don't be surprised. They don't care. Their boss is who writes their checks. That plain and simple, just like your boss is who writes your checks. And their checks ain't wrote by you. They don't give a shit what you say. I get tired. I see again these normie tier articles there. Write your congressman and tell them they don't care. Sure, lodge all the customer complaints, leave a bad review on Yelp. They don't give a shit. They're going to do whatever they're told to do by whoever it is that writes their damn paycheck. It's so simple. It's not hard to understand. It's the way it works in your life. The guy who writes your check, you're going to do what he says. If he says go sweep the floor, even though you're an engineer graduate, you can go sweep the damn floor because he writes your checks. You're going to do what you're told. And that, my friends, is how the system works. Y'all understand it. I realize. But you know, when you look at it from a different way and you hear it from a different, illustrated in a different manner, you know, I think of it a lot of times like, I may not be telling y'all anything you don't already know. But when you hear it in a different manner, it really helps you understand it, you know, and it also gives you something where somebody in your life, you know, in your normie day-to-day life, your work life comes up and starts bitching about the system and politicians. It gives you another way that you can go. You see that none of this shit is, it's not copyrighted. I'm not going to file a copyright infringement if you tell your coworker, let me tell you, who's our boss? The guy that writes our checks, right? Let me explain this to you. I'm not going to be offended. I'm giving you this information. You're free to share it with other people. you're free to share it with other people. Speaking of sharing, we got to get into the Christian specific segment. It is, the time is flying by. We're having so much fun. We got to keep on rolling. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 1 says, "To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven." And goes on to give some examples, kind of highlight that. But I wanted to just stop at that verse. It's a verse probably most of you are familiar with. There's a season. There's a season for everything under the sun. This is how our lives are. Our lives go by in seasons. Now, I was thinking about this the other day. And you have different points in your life. And one of the things I've observed in people is both when they miss their season, they miss the season when they're supposed to be doing something for whatever reason. And then I've also observed where people hold on to past seasons instead of moving on to the next season. They're still holding on. These are different stages in our lives. And as we mature and as we get older, we move on to a different season. You know, when you're in your youth, you know, you're doing youthful things, you know, but it is written that at some point you put away, you know, childish things and you take up the things of a man. And yet somebody who gets hung up and is unable to let go of a past season, they continue to hold on to childish things. They don't move on. When a child acts childish, nobody looks down on that because that's what they're supposed to be doing. They often will say, you know, let children be children. Let kids be kids. Don't sit there and try to put adult issues. It's always a shame when you see somebody try to put adult issues on a kid, because kids should be allowed to be kids. Why? Because that is their season. That is the season of life that they are in right now. I'm sure all of you have seen many examples of a child's season being corrupted by adults around them. Some parent, usually a single mother, who drags their little boy to a drag show and dresses him up for virtue signal points and to put it on social media. She's corrupting and dishonoring that season of that child's life. That child is in the season. They're in their childhood season, and that should be honored, because before, it's a very short season. When that season is over, and then they move on to the next season in their lives. Another very obvious example of seasons in our lives. I mean, before I move on to that, I was just I remembered when I was a young man, probably in high school, maybe just out of high school. Back in those days, we didn't all sit on the computer. We went riding around. If you were in a small town, if you were raised in a small town like me, you went up and down the drag. You know, you went up and down Main Street. You rode around. We partook in quite a bit of underage drinking. And no, the world didn't end because of it. But I remember I remember riding around with my friends. With all the other people, we were in our high school season, we were in our teenage season and doing what teenagers did at that point in time. And we're riding around up and down Main Street. And I remember laughing because at that time there was this old guy, quote unquote old guy, he was like 40. And he was riding around up and down Main Street doing the same thing we teenagers were. And I remember how laughable it was, and we all thought it was funny. And looking back on that, it was somebody who couldn't let go of that season. He was in the season of middle age. He was in the season of being 40 years old. And he was still desperately holding on to the season of being a teenager. I remember, too, I had a teacher when I was in high school. And she was old. I don't know. You know, she seemed older then. She was probably like my age now. I mean, I think she was old now. She looked old. I'll put it that way. She looked old. She was probably well in her 50s. I don't know. Maybe even 60 years old. And I remember how absurd it seemed to me, because this teacher looked at us on her first day in her class. And she looks at the class and she says, "Enjoy this time now, because these will be the best days of your life. practically with a tear in her eye. These would be the best days of your life. And even as a foolish teenager, I remember thinking, what a pathetic life she's probably lived if this is the best. But you see, again, she couldn't let go of that season. You could tell that she was still holding on to the idea of being the attractive girl, maybe the hot cheerleader, and ever she had all of this attention, and it was so wonderful. And a certain part of her was unable to let go of that season. One of the more obvious things you can observe on a regular basis in this society are women who miss their season. Men will also, I see a lot of men, you know, they get pretty fed up and they're angry and critical because of the way, you know, women have it. Women go by and they just, they act all crazy. How do I want to put this? They're running wild out there. They won't give a decent guy the time of day because they all have these really ridiculous, absurd standards of, you know, I got to find this guy who's like at least 6'5" and he's got to make at least $1 million a month to be worthy of me. And guys get angry at that, you know, because they're looking towards, they want to find a woman, you know, maybe ultimately get married and have a family. And this is what they're dealing with in the dating market. It's one of the things is that I have great sympathy for the younger men, for the younger people than perhaps a lot of people my age do. I'm very sympathetic towards the situation. But the guys will get really angry at that. And I think they miss the point. And there's a couple points to be made here. For starters, when you see one of these YouTube videos and they're talking to some young female on the street, usually she's all whored out in her dress. She's probably just come out of the club half drunk. And she'll sit there and say, I want a man who's got to make 6'5" and make $1 million a month or some ridiculous crap. There's a tons of videos of this stuff. And obviously, you know, she doesn't have the sense that God gave a goose. You know, all she's doing is it's just a more grown up version of if you asked a 7-year-old little girl, what does she want to do with her life? Well, I want to be a princess and I want to marry a prince who's going to, you know, give me a castle to live in. You see, mentally, she hasn't moved forward from that thinking. And that's pretty typical. It's pretty normal. What men miss when they get angry about, they look at this, you know, and these women go and whore themselves, get all whored up looking and go to the club and they get all this attention and they just won't give a decent guy the time of the day. And, oh, they're just out partying. They're doing this and they're doing that. And they're just, it increases and feeds their ego and they act narcissistic. And guys get, you know, I'm just never even going to, you know, talk to them. And they get bitter and angry, but they don't understand what they're viewing is. A woman, a young woman burning through a season. What men have to understand when they view this, you see, God gives women a season, a window of attractiveness when she's most fertile. She has a window of attractiveness from her teenage years up to, say, mid-20s to 30 years old. There is a window when she's got this attractiveness. Now, under traditional society, they were married off when they were teenagers. We're a long way from that now. That's just where we are. But God gives women this gift so that they are able to acquire a husband so that they, in a normal, natural, functioning society, the way the world's supposed to work, you know, they've got a husband and their life is established early on so that they're cared for. That's why God gives them that. In this broken society, virtually all of them, the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of them simply burn through that window. And it's a very small window. They burn through that window. And when they wake up one day and they're 38 and no husband, no children, and they're, you know, way past that attractive window that they just convinced themselves was going to last forever because they were special and a princess. And there's no hope, really, a realistic hope. They're not going to have children. Maybe with enough medical help, they might have one. But most of them at that stage are barreling towards Wine Cat Lady stage. That window closes up very quickly. And once it's gone, this is the point. Once it's gone, the season is gone. You have, and this is what I used this example, not to dog on women, but because it's one of the most easily recognized, easily, you know, easy to look at and understand examples of burning through a season. You have to understand time, you know, time doesn't stop. I mean, this we get one go around on this thing. And when a woman burns through that season, it's over. When you wake up and you're 38 years old, you burned through that little window when you were at peak attractiveness, that window to start a family, get married and have children. And, you know, instead you spend it clubbing it up and working on your quote unquote career, which is just a job, by the way. Really, there's pretty much no such thing as a career. That was just another word someone came up with to make you feel better about being a wage slave. You spent your time selling yourself off into being a wage slave, and now you are with no children. You burned through that opportunity, and what do you have to show for it? Faded looks and a crappy wagey job that you convinced yourself was instead a quote unquote career. But the season is gone. You can't go back and get it back. If a woman realizes at 38, I've seen several articles, I'm sure you have too, you know, written by women who are like in their 40s or 50 years old, and they're like, look, I did this. Young ladies, don't do this. You know, they've written, and they deserve applause for that. They really do. They deserve credit for that, to at least try to warn the younger women. Don't do what I did. It is an admission of regret, because no matter how much you regret it, you can't go back. The season's over. You missed it. You burned through it, and now it's over. You can regret it. You can understand that it was a mistake, and that's all well and good, but it isn't going to change the fact that you burned through that season. That once the season is over, it's over. You know, I mean, looking back, you can't undo it. You can't undo those decisions. It seemed like a good time, and that's what society was saying to do. But once the season's gone, it's gone. You've lost it. You're never going to have that which you could have potentially had. At the time, it didn't seem important. But now that you've moved into the next season and you don't have those things, a woman should have had children, and now she's moving into the next season. Those children are mostly grown, and she's looking forward to grandchildren. She's not going to have any of that to look forward to as she moves into this other season, because she blew through that season. Again, I'm not picking on women. This can be applied in multiple areas for everybody. There's a time in your life for different things. It's important to recognize that and do what you need to do now. And when you move into the next stage of your life, you need to let that go. Don't keep holding on to it. Move into the next thing. Don't get so looking forward to one thing that you miss the current season. And likewise, when you've moved into the next season, don't keep holding on to the previous, because then you just look ridiculous. I see many examples of, you see, I'm sorry now, y'all think I'm picking on these different demographics, but I'm not. But it's just because, again, these are points that apply to everybody, but you have these glaring examples. Like I used a woman missing her season, that God gives her this window of peak attractiveness and fertility, and it's a very short window. An example, people holding on to others, you know, not letting go of a past season. The most one easily recognized example of this is the average baby boomer. I see them all the time. You've got some decrepit ass old man, and he's driving around in a Corvette. I mean, I don't care what you drive in. It's none of my business. If you enjoy it, I guess. But you can tell for most of them, because it's rampant. It's not just one off person. It's this grasping onto youth. You read an article about some baby boomer age celebrity, and it will refer to her boyfriend. I was recently conversing with a baby boomer, and in conversation, they made mention of their girlfriend. And I literally looked at them and laughed and said, girlfriend? And they looked at me like, well, what's so funny? It's like, you old. What you talking about, girl? You ain't got no girlfriend. You know, a teenager has a girlfriend. An old man don't have no girlfriend. That's just so silly. So silly to me. It's an easy example. Baby boomers have never been able to move on to the next stage. They continue, on average, continue. And again, this isn't about picking on those groups. It's just these are the easiest examples to pick out where people look at and say, yes, I've seen that. They just continue to hold on and act like they're young. I know of baby boomers. They're old guys. And yet, you know, they still talk about, you know, how good they look, and they think they're being attractive. You know, these women find them attractive. It's like, no, you're old. Just move on. You know, I'm an early Gen Xer, you know, and I already consider myself old. You know, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not old enough to be a boomer by a few years, but I still look in the mirror and I'm like, damn, I got old, you know, I got old. And you know what? I'm okay with that, because that you, if you move into the next, say you take each season as it comes and then accept the next one, A, you don't look silly and foolish. And B, each season has its thing. Each season has its benefits. You know what I'm saying? Each season has something unique to it that you get out of it, that you learn, that you learn from, that you can enjoy a different experience in life. You don't want to be hung up in trying to be in the teenage spring, I guess you would say, spring or summer season of your life, your whole life, because that's just stupid. Each season has something new, something different, some new experience to be gained, and new things to enjoy, you know, something different that you couldn't have enjoyed back then. I've always made the joke, you know, because people say, boy, you know, if I could go back, the older you get, people around you, they'll say, boy, if I could go back, if I could just go back and be 19 again. And whenever anybody comes at me with that, man, if I could just go back, would you go back? If I could, I'd go back and be 19 again. And I always had the same response. Well, A, no, I have no idea. I've been through enough BS as it is. I don't want to go through it again. You know, all that stuff behind me is behind me. I won't go through that again. And B, if I had to, the only way would be if I could take my current knowledge with me. But even then, no, I don't. I don't want to go back and re-go through those seasons again. There would be no point to it. I've had enough. I don't want to do anymore. No, I'm good. I don't want to go back and have to learn all the same damn lessons the hard way all over again. I'm good. I don't know. Count me out. It's a shame. It's ridiculous to continue to hold on to a past season because you can miss the current season. And it's always a shame to miss what season you're in. Because again, just like the woman who misses that opportunity to have her kids and to get her life established with a husband and a family, which is something that's going to stay with you your whole life, not no damn job. It's something that will stay with you your whole life. You'll always have your kids and ultimately your grandkids. This is a lifelong accomplishment that even after you're gone, they'll still be here. Your damn job ain't. Your job is minute that it's their benefit to cut you loose. You're gone. There's no such thing as a career. And as we go through the seasons in our life, when you have people that look back and they regret because they missed a season, we have to understand that ultimately, if you think of the seasons of the year, spring, summer, fall, and then ultimately you wind up in winter, which would be old age. There's no new spring. And like we'll go through winter and you're looking forward to spring. You know, we're going to have spring next year. It's going to start warming up. In the seasons of our life, there is no spring. We get one. We get one season in each life. Once you wake up one day, and it'll be here before you know it, and you're in the winter of your life, that's it. You're never going to see another spring. You don't get to start all over. And when the seasons are over, when you miss the seasons, and once they're over, you see our lives ultimately are like that. Once we leave this world, once winter finishes up, and you leave this world, and your time here is over, how many seasons did you miss? As believers, our whole point is to understand, you know, why we're here. We don't want to miss the whole reason, we were here. We don't want to miss all the seasons. Because basically the one overriding thing in all of our seasons is to grow and understand the Lord and spiritually mature. That's why we're here. And just as a woman who wakes up one day and she's 50 years old and blew her life on her career and meaningless things, and she realizes it and is filled with deep regret, but yet there is no, it is hopelessness. It's coupled with hopelessness because there is no going back and making a different decision. It's done now. Imagine that amplified countless times over to finish this entirety of this life. Stand before the Lord and realize that you blew the whole thing. You blew the whole entire purpose of your entire life. You just threw it out the window on stupid frivolities. And you didn't do anything that you were supposed to do. And you realize it now. You're standing before God and looking at yourself, and you realize how stupid and foolish this is. But just like the woman writing a letter to the younger generation saying, don't do what I did, I missed this opportunity and spent it on foolish things, she can't change that, and you can't either. Once this life is done, you're done. You can look back and go, oh my gosh, what did I do? I spent all those seasons I had in life, I spent all of the entirety of my life, I didn't accomplish a damn thing, and there's no going back. There's no fixing it. Spent it running around doing stupid, worldly, sinful things. You know, just things that didn't matter. You know, just wasted it doing, chasing after crap that didn't even matter. And it's just a damn shame. You don't want to be there. Don't want to miss your season. Just accept. Accept the new stages of your life. You know, I mean, if you're a teenager, enjoy being a teenager. You know, just don't get hung up on, oh, my life will really start when I'm able to get married and start a family. Just enjoy where you're at right now. And when you move into the next season, for goodness sakes, let the old one go and move into the next season. You should be able to do that your whole life. Recognize what season you're in. Do what you need to do. And of course, obviously the overriding theme is you want to be maturing spiritually. You want to be getting closer to God. That's what we strive for as Christian believers. We're trying to always mature and accept the next stages. Even winter, you know, there's something, you know, when you get older, you're freed of some of those burdens of youth. You know, just accept the next stage. But always, we always are striving to mature spiritually. Overall, the whole point of all of the seasons, mature spiritually and grow closer to the Lord. And the closer we get to the Lord, the more we turn away from sin. You know, it just starts to fall away. It's hard to explain. The closer you get to God, people get hung up, and I think I mentioned this on yesterday's Day of the Nationalists. The more people get hung up on trying to overcome sin, they focus on the sin, and it's that trap of like the law of trying to rule follow. The more you spiritually mature and the closer you get to the Lord, the more you detest that which you once desired in your sinful flesh, and it'll start to naturally fall away. Naturally fall away. There's a common element in sin. And if you look at sin, no matter what it is, there is a common thing that accompanies sin. Now, as you all well know, there's much written, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself, or to love your enemies. And we've talked multiple times about what that means. It's not empty emotionalism. You know, it's about how you treat. But if you focus on that as yourself, if you hate yourself, if it is written to love your neighbor as yourself, but how can you do that if you don't love yourself? You see, the common denominator, the common element that accompanies sin is a certain degree of self-loathing. It's you probably can't spot it, and the more it has its hooks in you, the less likely you are to actually see it. But there is an element of self-loathing. All sin has it. There is an element of self-loathing directly attached to sin. And the more engaged in sin you are, the more you're going to have a feeling, a mindset. There's going to be self-loathing present. You see this in extreme examples. This broken and corrupted society, they promote all of this homosexuality, the trans thing, all of this that goes along with it. And they say, this is a wonderful thing. Boy, this, what this, they have a whole month dedicated to being proud of this. But what you see as a commonality in that community of people engaged in that behavior is self-loathing. What do you mean? They're dancing around. They're talking about pride and how happy they are. And they have the highest suicide rates of anybody else. They have the highest drug abuse rates, the highest alcohol abuse rates, and the highest rates of self-destructive behavior. Where does that come from? Self-loathing. You can sit there and say, be proud. And, oh, this is great. And, oh, yes. And now the liars who promote this, the liars who bring death and promote this and try to make sure people stay locked into sin, they say the reason for that, their justification, the reason for that is the rest of society isn't embracing them enough, isn't accepting of them enough. But the real reality is that that sin comes with a huge amount of self-loathing attached. And it's not hard to find. You see it demonstrated in the behavior itself. This is self-loathing. There's an element of hatred for oneself, and these people try to overcome this, and they try to go dance around it and hold on to the sin and understandably try to shed themselves of that element of self-loathing that's attached to it. But you can't do it. Because the two are linked. That's where it is coming from. The source of the self-loathing is the sin. You see what I'm saying? The element of the self-loathing is the sin. I mentioned in passing that the whole trans thing, which you notice they've kind of gotten quiet about lately. They've gotten quiet about a lot of these social issues now that their foreign policy stuff is breaking down. We haven't heard much. I haven't had very many stories about drag shows for little kids recently. You look at the trans thing. What more of a clear example of self-loathing being present, can you imagine, than being that dissatisfied with your own body? You know what I'm saying? You're so unhappy that your body is, that you were born into the body that you are. The massive amount of self-loathing with that is you, and then you wind up destroying and butchering the body that you have. And it's not hard to imagine that feeding off of itself. And you get this, again, there's this massive high suicide rate in this community. And we as a society, I don't consider myself part of this broken society. I'm an outlier. And so are you. We step outside. But anyway, this broken society encourages this self-loathing. But just as we talked about earlier missing seasons, once time goes by, you can't undo it. You can't undo the decisions that you made. Now, you can make new decisions. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you can't repent and turn away. I'm not saying that. But what damage you do has done. Say a person who has gone, depending on how far they've gone with that, you've destroyed your hormone system by taking these different hormones. Whether it's women taking testosterone or men taking estrogen, whichever form it is taken in. When you see these stories and some teenage girl has her breasts cut off because she thinks she's trans because it's all the rage right now, well, that's all well and good when she realizes that was a mistake, but she ain't getting her tits back. Let's be honest, they're not coming back. You can't undo it. When you're butchering your body, this is an act of self-loathing. When you see some emo person and like they're always, wear the dark makeup and everything, and they sit around and everybody makes jokes about how they go home and cut themselves. That's, that person has self-loathing. They have self-loathing. You don't go home and cut yourself to feel the pain that you're literally hurting yourself. This is something you do because of self-loathing. And self-loathing always comes hand in hand with sin. It does. You can't get away from it. The more sin is present in your life, the more the firmer a hold it has on you. The self-loathing is going to be there, and perhaps the harder it is going to be to understand and to see that for what it is. And you think you're doing these other things, you think you're doing certain things for other reasons, but you're not. The real motivation is self-loathing. Again, an emo person cutting their arm, they obviously have there's obviously self-loathing present. If you cut your dick off, that's a lot of cutting. If you cut your breasts off, I mean, that's a lot of cutting. That's a lot of self-loathing to start destroying the body that you have. See, it's self-loathing. And the broken society sits there and says this is a great thing because this society is satanic in its very nature. It promotes destruction. It claims to love these people all the while amplifying, encouraging, and promoting them in the self-loathing and to continue in self-loathing, sin, and self-destructive behavior. It's a lie, which is a surprise because that's how Satan rolls, and we all understand that. Sin always has self-loathing attached to whatever sin you've got in your life. You may be, you know, you can look at people that got up, which you consider a lot of sin going on, but whatever sin you got going on also has self-loathing attached to it. There's going to be self-loathing in there. And the point here is to reflect back again where I kind of started with this. When you read, you know, to love your neighbors yourself, well, that then starts from a standpoint you have to love yourself. If you have self-loathing, if you hate yourself on whatever level, you're not going to be able to love nobody else. You're not going to be able, you want to see what I'm saying? You're not going to have that because you don't have it for yourself. If you don't have it for yourself, you're not going to be able to have it for anybody else. That just makes sense. The further away from sin you get, the more you understand this. The more, and it may, just because of my own shortcomings, it may have come out sounding like garbled gibberish. But trust me, the further away from sin you get, and the closer to the Lord you get, the more you recognize these things. And when you just look around, it's like you can observe this as reality. Just the further up out of the sin that everybody's wallowing around in, the further up out of the more you climb up, I imagine a river of feces, and most everybody's drowning around in it. And we as believers, we're trying to climb up on a rock and get as far out of that as we can. And the further up of that rock and out of that you get in your life, the more you can just look around and observe and go, oh my gosh, what the hell? And you realize that it's self-loathing, that sin will have self-loathing attached to it. So when you recognize that as how it works, you can understand a lot of the things. You know, again, sin can become self-perpetuating. It brings self-loathing. And because you have self-loathing, you have a certain level of hatred for yourself. It will make you double down on sin, on the self-destructing behavior, which brings more self-loathing, and it becomes a death loop, a death spiral. That's why, again, a lot of the people like in the homosexual community have such a high suicide rate and a high drug abuse rate, etc., is because they're in a death loop. You know, the self-loathing brings more sin because of the self-loathing, which brings more self-loathing. It's a spiral that's going down. But you're alive on this earth and you can stop. I hope you caught my Daily National show yesterday. It was my version of a Christmas show. And the whole point at the end of the show, which kind of made the headline of the show, was you're on this bus, and it don't matter how far, if you're alive, you know, you can push the button and get off the damn bus anytime you want. Maybe a long walk back, but you can get off the bus. That's why you are alive. No matter what season you're in your life and how much you've wasted, how much time you've wasted, how far down the road you've gone. Look, if you're alive on this earth, it ain't too late. You know, it might be a struggle getting start heading down the road where you want to go. But the longer you stay on that death bus headed to hell, the longer you stay on that bus going the way that in your heart of hearts, you know you're not going where you want to go. Look, the sooner you get off the damn bus, the better. You can start the trip headed in the right direction. where you want to go. And you start getting free of the self-loathing. Actually start, you know, the more free, like I said, I talked about a death loop of self-loathing and sin. We got to wrap up. But I talked just a while ago about, I mentioned a death loop, you know, of self-loathing. See, it works the other way too, though. You start getting free of sin and you start shedding that self-loathing. And then you get a little more free of sin and you shed a little more. And then you understand how the self-loathing has been feeding into it. And you're like, why have I basically hated myself? Well, when, you know, and you can start a spiral climbing up out of it, can work the other direction too. It may be more difficult, but you can do that. It can work that way as well. We got to wrap up. I appreciate you stopping by. I hope you get a chance to enjoy, as always, I hope you get a chance to enjoy all our great content here on Radio Albion. And I hope you'll get a chance to stop by next week for the Parish of the Patriots.